Hey everybody, welcome back to the Percy Jackson and Poseidon podcast. This is going to be part two for the book Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Sea of Monsters. So we left off with the trio boarding Clarice's dead Confederate naval ship, and instead of letting them help her, Clarice kind of decides to hold them hostage a little bit so that she can finish the quest on her own. Because Clarice was given this quest, and she's being pressured by her father, Ares, the god of war, to finish it without the help of Percy. He doesn't want Percy interfering. So she decides to sail the ship between Charybdis and Scylla, because that's the only way to the Sea of Monsters. So the ship gets attacked by those monsters. Tyson proves himself to be pretty helpful by helping fix the ship's engine a little bit, at least for a while. But eventually the ship wrecks, and Tyson goes down with a ship, but Percy and Annabeth manage to escape on a boat, and Tyson is left behind. So then Percy thinks that Tyson's dead, and he starts to feel bad about how he treated him, not claiming him as his brother and everything. And we learn a little bit more about another prophecy that Annabeth was told by Chiron from decades ago, saying that a child of the Big Three will become powerful and decide the fate of the Olympians if they reach age 16. And that's the real reason why the Big Three, back during World War II, set the rule that they weren't going to have any more half-blood children. And so, of course, Percy thinks that this is about him because he's the only sort of known current child of a Big Three. Chiron thought it might have been Thalia, but then she was turned into a tree, and so Percy thinks it's him. And then this is something that comes up in later on in the book and going forward, this prophecy. And then Percy and Annabeth end up on Circe's island, and Percy gets turned into a guinea pig. And Annabeth rescues him and changes him back, and along with the other guinea pigs, back into men, by using the vitamins that Hermes had given Percy. So the vitamins come into play, and the thermos of the winds came into play to help them sail as well. So the gifts that Hermes gave them proved to actually be helpful. So the two escape the island, and they get on a boat, and they sail past the island of the sirens. And it's the singing of the sirens is something that Annabeth wants to hear, but she doesn't want them to control her. So Percy puts some earplugs in, and Annabeth gets tied up, and so she can hear the visions that the sirens are singing to her. But what she doesn't know is Percy's also able to see those visions as well. And so Annabeth gets these visions of her and Luke, and they were friends and everything, and then she gets these visions of her and her parents together, and it kind of gives you a little bit more insight to Annabeth as a character. But then the boat ends up crashing, and Percy rescues Annabeth from drowning. And the two of them eventually do make it to the island that Polyphemus lives on. And so they sneak their way into his cave and are able to rescue Grover. But they also discover that Clarice was also captured as well. So Percy and Annabeth then trick Polyphemus. But Annabeth ends up getting injured. And just before Polyphemus can attack Percy, Tyson comes in to save the day by throwing a rock into the mouth of the giant Cyclops. So then Percy, Grover, Tyson, Clarice, and Annabeth all make their way back to the ship with the Golden Fleece. They were able to get that trick at Polyphemus to giving them the Golden Fleece as well. But just before they can make it to safety, Polyphemus does chase after them. And Percy and Tyson fight Polyphemus while Clarice and Grover get Annabeth, who's injured, back to the ship. And Percy is able to use his water powers, which is really cool, and also Riptide to help fight Polyphemus. But instead of killing the giant Cyclops, Percy takes mercy on him because Cyclops are children of Poseidon. So in a way, he is also a half-brother of Percy, or at least definitely half-brother of Tyson. So he takes a little bit of pity on him, and they do manage to distract him long enough to get Tyson and Percy back to the ship. But then Clarice just has to push it one too far. She taunts Polyphemus. So then he throws a large rock, causing the boat to then sink. So Percy and friends have to abandon ship. And as they sink in the water, Percy and Tyson are able to call upon the hippocampi to come and rescue them. So the hippocampi from earlier come back into play here, and they hurry away from the island riding on the hippocampi. So that's always fun to see these mythological creatures being interacting and how useful they can be in these stories. And so they're able to take them all the way to the beaches of Miami, and they realize they've been gone for actually 10 days because of the way time magic works in the Sea of Monsters. So Clarice then reveals the prophecy that she was given by the Oracle, and saying that she needed the help of Percy, and Percy realizes that Clarice is the one that needs to take the Golden Fleece back to Camp Half-Blood, but that she also needed their help to retrieve it to begin with. But they only had enough money to fly Clarice back on a plane, because Percy can't fly because Zeus is the god of the sky and would possibly strike him down with lightning. So Clarice is the one that has to fly back to Camp Half-Blood. While this does make sense, I do wish we got a bit more from Clarice in this book. She pops up a few times, kind of, in the beginning, and then on the ship, and then towards the end. But then she's always gone. And I know that this is Percy's story, so we have to make way for Percy and Annabeth a lot. But I wish we would have gotten a little bit more into Clarice as a character, I think. Because I like that, you know, she does have this pressure from her father Ares. And what does that say, that she had to kind of go against that and needed Percy's help in order to finish the quest. So I wish we could have got a little bit more from Clarice as a character. But then Percy, Annabeth, Tyson, and Grover, they get captured by Luke and his gang. And Luke had been waiting for Percy to get the Golden Fleece, because he was going to take it from them to use it to heal Kronos, and then he was going to give it back to them. And so then Percy and Luke sort of have this little standoff, and Percy manages to get an iris message opened up behind Luke in the water and have Luke reveal his plan to the rest of Camp Half-Blood. So Luke admits that he was the one that poisoned Thalia's tree and framed Chiron. And Luke reveals that the Magic Fleece would help restore Kronos, and so that he was behind all of this. So this then proves to Dionysus and Tantalus and the whole camp that was listening in that Luke was behind it all. So Dionysus reinstates Chiron as activities director, and Tantalus goes back to the underworld. So then Percy and Luke get into a sword fight, but before Luke can beat Percy, Chiron and the other centaurs come in out of nowhere, because Chiron was able to overhear the iris message. So it's a little bit of a deus ex machina to just have Chiron and company come in and save the day just as Percy needs help. It's a bit random, you know, it's something, but then again, these similar things happen to Harry Potter and the Harry Potter books all the time. You know, luck and assistance do play a big factor in the hero's journey. I just wish it would have felt a little more organic for why Chiron is there. It just happens to be there in Miami. But that's the way it plays out. So Chiron then tells Percy that they need to get back to Camp Half-Blood. And he tells Percy about the prophecy and his thoughts, which Percy assumes is about him, because he's the currently only known child of one of the big three. But I like that Chiron is kind of a little hesitant about that. He's a little suspicious because, you know, he points out that Percy is the only one they know of right now. As if, you know, Chiron knows that there are other children out there, or if, you know, because you have to make it to 16, so I don't know. I just like that kind of skepticism that Chiron has. I think it's really unique. I wish we could delve a little bit more into that. But then Chiron also tells Percy that Kronos is his father, which is true to traditional Greek mythology. And I also like what Chiron tells Percy about being a half-blood hero and why it's important. He says that half-bloods are able to live in both the human world and the magical world, which means that they can have power to affect both worlds. So, which is why heroes are the ones that go on quests, and it's why Luke can try to resurrect Kronos. And it's a really great way to explain why half-bloods are important in this world and what kind of role that they play. So I really do like that as well. And then once back at Camp Half-Blood, Percy's visited by Hermes, and he gives them a letter from Poseidon. And then Chiron is reinstated as a camp activities director, and he brings back the chariot race. And Tyson gives Percy a watch that he made that turns into a shield that he built himself because Cyclops are good metal workers and forgers. And so that's kind of a cool thing that Percy has now, is this watch that turns into a shield, and he has the pen that turns into a sword, Riptide. And then Annabeth and Percy win the chariot race. No birds attacks. Annabeth gives credit to Tyson for helping them on their quest. And Percy proclaims Tyson as his brother. And so that brings their arcs with Tyson to an end by acknowledging him, not as a monster, but as a camp half-blood camper. And Annabeth gives Percy a kiss on the cheek, and it's a little subtle hint that maybe, you know, they might like each other, at least in an innocent teenager type of way. Because earlier in the book, Percy did notice Annabeth's makeover from the island to Circe, and, you know, he didn't really know how to feel about that. So it's a cute little young teenage moment where Percy doesn't know how to feel about the kiss that Annabeth gives him, and I think Annabeth knows, but I think Percy's just an awkward teenage boy and has no idea what to do with girls. But I do like it when they get to act like young teenagers like that. It feels real and authentic. But then Tyson tells Percy that he was invited to go to the underwater forge in the realm of Poseidon, and so he ends up leaving. But Grover ends up staying at camp at least for the summer to hang out. So the Golden Fleece has been healing the poison from the camp, and in the end it's revealed that the fleece even restores the magic of the tree too well, which brings Talia back to life. And so Percy understands why the tree was poisoned to begin with, and why Luke was going to give him the fleece after he used it to restore Kronos, because Talia is the daughter of Zeus, which means that Percy is no longer the only person that the prophecy could be about. So by bringing Talia back to life, it's a way for Luke and Kronos to sort of affect and the prophecy and try to turn Talia onto their side. So it's a really great way to end the book. And when I first read it, I remember being really shocked. It ties up a lot of the breadcrumbs that have been sort of led throughout the book. Like, we learned about Talia in the first book, and she was turned into a tree. And we learned about, you know, Annabeth's relationship with Luke and Talia. And then in this book, we learn a little bit more about that, and how Annabeth and them were attacked by a Cyclops, which is why she didn't like Tyson. And so a lot of these breadcrumbs have been laid from the beginning. And so I really think these two books really do a good job sort of complementing each other. And I just think it's a really great way to end this. The second book is by bringing Talia back to life, because now we don't know where the prophecy is going to go from here. It's a little great. It's not really even a twist. It's more of a little bit more of a cliffhanger. So I really do like that aspect a lot. I think this is a good book. I don't love it like I remember loving it, but we'll get more. I'll get more into that in my part 3 review, where I'm going to go over the book and the characters and the plot more. And so this is just about the ending of the book, and I think the ending's a bit rushed with Polyphemus, but I do like all the stuff we got back once we're back at camp and everything. So that's my review. That's my part 2 review for the second half of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Sea of Monsters. So thank you all for listening to the podcast, and stay tuned for more of the Percy Jack, Son of Poseidon podcast. Thank you.